for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. I'm here.
Bruce Hello, Strong, neighbor.
John Palmer. We got Doc in the studio with us.
Good to be here.
Helping us out on Stardust. And we've got Nick Burton. He's joined us here, a neighbor and a friend of mine.
Kind of playing Joe, the home brewer here.
Yeah, he come to sit in with us. And, of course, we got Justin, I don't know, twiddling his knobs or something like that.
Twiddle boy, twiddle.
That's what I do best.
Well, I want to show you guys something. Check this out.
Make Quaker.
About that label.
That's great.
Yeah, this guy, he emailed me.
Mug there.
He brewed the oatmeal stout recipe from the Brewing Classic Styles book, which you can pick up in the Brewing Network store, yep. Signed by both John Palmer and myself. And so he put this label together, and it's got you know, like a Quaker Oats looking guy, and he put my face on it, and it just cracked me up.
It took me a second. I thought it was a very cool looking label. Yeah. It took me a second to realize, hey, that face is wrong.
Yeah. I showed this to my wife. She's like, ah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, you make a good looking Quaker.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I got the, like, you know. It doesn't look like inappropriate at all. Like, I'm old enough to wear that hair and that hat. You know,
very good.
Just fits totally.
Well, how does it taste?
Haven't tasted. That's why I brought it. We crack it
Excellent.
Open. Give that a taste during the show. Yeah, it's cold. It's ready to go. That's the oatmeal stout recipe from the book.
There it goes.
And we've been enjoying a number of other great beers here, which is one of the things we enjoy on show day. And you know,
just be able to imbibe while working. It's nice.
Yeah.
I can't do it during the week.
I was going to say, Doc doesn't ever get to do that.
Yeah, if we only got paid while we were working, that would do it too.
That ain't going to happen. Better enjoy the drinking.
Nice aroma on this beer.
That's as close as you get.
Nice looking head. Quite dark, but clear.
Sounds like the kind of hookers you prefer.
He likes the dark head. Toss me a little bit.
Just looking
here.
Down at the dark head. Yeah,
okay. It's worth the plane flight up here, isn't it?
It is.
You'd be annoyed and pestered like you are in the show.
Wondering how quick the show is going to go blue.
3 minutes
yeah,
into
it. Nice
2 seconds into it. Yeah,
nice and dry.
It really didn't take much.
Here you go.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice stout. Now, I would assume that brewing from Brewing Classic Styles, and it seems like it turned out to be a good beer. Probably what? Made a starter?
Yeah.
Yeast?
I bet he did. Pitched lots of healthy yeast, the right amount.
Funny that we're going to be talking about starters today.
How did that happen?
I don't know. It's like coincidence. You know, these smooth transitions from one thing to another.
Yeah. But yeast starters are very important to a good brew.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I got a lot of questions on starters. So I got some information on starters on the Mr. Malty website, www.mrmalty.com. So there's a bunch of stuff there, but still we get a ton of questions in from folks like Graham out in Singapore. He was saying, I've just finished making a stir plate. Looks like it'll be capable of driving a 2-inch stir bar, as much as 4 to 5 liter of starter, so it'll do okay. He says, I have some questions. They may be pretty simple to you, but not to me. How do I know the starter is maxed out or finished? I've left a trial jar on the plate for 2 days. I saw a color change. It settled out. It was clear, so I guess it was done, but you know, how do I know for sure? But,
that's a good point.
You know, if it's slow, the yeast is slower or faster, how can I know that the starter's done? You know, after, is it 24 hours? Is it 2 days? Is it, you know, 6 hours? What is it really? Then, you know, he has, you know, what if you know, you get a package of yeast and you know, it's 6 months, 8 months, a year old, and you know, there's not a lot left in it. Smack pack, you smack it, and it kind of very slowly starts to creep up. I mean,
right,
you know,
right.
What do you do with that? Is that how much yeast do you consider that when that's done? Is it you know, a portion of it? You know, should, how does that affect the size starters? So a lot of different you know, questions on starters that people are asking. And I thought, hey, you know, let's do a show on starters.
Excellent,
you know,
idea.
So I brought Doc in, and
yeah. It could be voodoo to a lot of people. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and let's start you know, from the beginning. Doc, define for me, you know, what is a starter?
A starter is you're making a mini beer to either activate or replicate your yeast, so mm-hmm. you can have it ready to go into your full batch of beer.
Get the yeast more lively,
right.
Good health.
They've been dormant. Some of them are dead. Mm-hmm. You want to get them to do what they're going to do. They're going to multiply up to where they need to be. They're going to be a very active phase, mm-hmm. and that's what you really want, to really lower the lag time mm-hmm. When you pitch them into your full wort.
Right. But the purpose of a starter is to make yeast, not to make beer. So there's a,
yes.
there are subtle differences between brewing and making a starter and versus making a batch of beer. So.
Yeah, but I just paid $6 for that tube of White Labs yeast. Isn't that going to ferment my 5 gallons of beer?
To a point, you can, but we're all about, and why you're listening to this show, so you can make better beer.
Mm-hmm. Or the best beer you possibly can.
Or the best beer you can. Right, and it's just one more trick, one more tool that you have to do it. And you can get mixed results with just pitching one vial or one mm-hmm. smack pack in there. It depends on beer you're doing.
Yep.
Whether you're doing a lager or you're doing a big high gravity thing, if the yeast is a little bit older, that kind of thing all takes into consideration what's going to happen.
Right? So one of the reasons you might want to make a starter is, you know, the yeast when you buy it at the store, they can't get it, like, you know,
same day
from the factory, and then, you know, sell it to you same day and put fresh ones on the shelf every day. You know, the yeast has got a good shelf life, and it'll last for a good, you know, 4 months or more. But the issue is, you know, if it's at the beginning of the 4 months, yeah, that's one thing. If it's near the end of the 4 months, maybe, you know, the yeast isn't quite as viable.
Yeah, it
and,
may be down like 50%.
Not really ready to fully ferment. So you're going to put it in the starter and revitalize the yeast, would you say?
Yeah.
As well as like you were saying, Doc, grow
yeah, some more
grow yeast.
Some more. I've used some yeast vials that I found in the back that are pretty old,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have any problem doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't pitch just that vial into it,
right.
Or I have questioned what John was talking about, the viability of it. You might have 50% of them are dead or more. It might be down to 10%.
Right.
I got some. And if I'm in a pinch, or if I really just want to experiment and try to do it, I'll make a starter. Sometimes with that, if it's really old, I'll use two.
Mm-hmm.
I'll step it up twice.
And you can grow that small amount of less viable yeast into as much healthy viable yeast as you want. And
right. And
that has to go with pitching rate, too. So
mm-hmm.
pitching rate affects the quality of the beer you're going to get at the end. And so you're going through this process to ensure you're going to have the right pitching rate of healthy yeast.
Right, and what you were saying about, you know, you got pitching rate for something and the viability is down just because it says this, how many billion cells in this vial. When you've got less viability, how many of them are dead, you're not going to have that rate.
Right.
And you're going to have to get something done
mm-hmm.
to have your fermentation the way you want it.
Yeah, at full strength. You know, fresh off the line, a smack pack or a vial will have about 100 billion cells.
Right.
And that's good to pitch to 5 gallons of a 1040 ale, you know, nominally. That's about the right rate, or the nominal rate. But then you can play with that. You can pitch less to get more esters. You can pitch more to get a cleaner beer. And as the viability of that yeast that you started with goes down, you're going to need a starter more and more to get it back up to that 100%, 100 billion cells. And or depending on the gravity of the beer you're pitching to, the style of the beer you're pitching to, you know, all these are factors that influence how much yeast that you eventually want to pitch. And the way you build that up is with a starter.
Yeah, and people ask me about Mr. Malty and the calculator. Well, I calculate that. How do I get that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do well, I buy more yeast?
What is the pitching rate then? You got you know, you talked about it, but there has to be a formula for that then. For all of us who don't have the
It's actually kind of it works best
it's hidden,
on a spreadsheet.
Sorry, no. well, it generally you know, 3/4 of a well, 3/4 of a million per degree Plato per milliliter of wort.
Yeah.
And
you do
for ales, for lagers, you know, 1.5. Now, that's why the pitching rate calculator makes it, you know, super easy for you. You can just dial in, you know, MrMalty.com for all your pitching calculator needs. It's actually free, and you enter in your recipe parameters, and then that'll tell you how much yeast you need.
It's a very good tool.
Well, let's kind of back up a little bit. We're talking about how much yeast we need, but all right. So, starters like a mini beer. How do you make this? I mean, what do I need to do it? What are the steps? What are is there a kit I just buy? You know, instead of buying a pale ale kit, I buy a starter kit, or what do I do here?
You can do it just like when you're starting out to making beer. You can make it as simple as you want using the spaghetti pot you have in the kitchen already. Okay. You can buy an Erlenmeyer and use it that way. Basically, you've got to boil some wort. And how do you make the wort? You use the easiest way is you're going to use some DME. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the best ways. I don't use hops in there. You really don't need it. You just have to figure out what gravity you want and how much DME to put in. The best way to figure it out is make it the easiest you can. And one of the easiest ways to do it is buy an Erlenmeyer. You can put it right on the stove. You can put it right in the water. Cool it down right after that because you have to cool it and you want to be pitching as fast as you can. So do you need tons of that stuff? No. You can use a saucepan with a lid on it. I've seen that's John do it in his book.
Yeah.
That's not that hard. You just add a measuring cup and some DME, maybe some yeast nutrient, and a vial of yeast. That's pretty much all you need. And some ice or a water bath to cool it down. So you don't need a ton of stuff to do it. Mm-hmm. But there are stuffs that make it easier to do it. And Erlenmeyer's for sure.
Which is a large glass flask.
Yes.
One of those skinny at the top and kind of triangular out
triangular
to a wide
at the bottom. And right. It's made of glass that can go right on the stove.
A borosilicate glass.
And
right.
You can put it right into the cold ice bath if you want and it won't break.
Right.
So that's one tip I would say. If you're gonna buy something for it, do that.
If you're gonna buy it, I was talking to Jamil about this on the way to the show here. You might as well go and get yourself one of those big 5,000 or 6,000 mil flasks.
Yes.
You have the one big one. You know, tell them you go and get one of those fine young ladies that work in the packaging at More Beer to grab you one of those. And that thing works great because if I'm making it for 5 gallons of beer and it's a 1040 beer, that's fine. I only have to fill it up to 2,000 mils. But if you're going to be doing 10 gallons of a Doppelbock, well, you're set. You've got that big, you know, 6,000 mils.
You can do it with two Erlenmeyers, two smaller ones. You'll start, if you buy a smaller one, you're going to end up buying the second one and then having to do two starters. And again, it's getting complicated.
Well, the funny thing is I use a 2,000 mil flask. That's what I use. And the thing I've been doing is I'll step up my starter. So I'll make a starter, multiple levels of starter. Mm-hmm. If I need the equivalent of 6 liters of starter, I just make a 2,000 mil starter 3 times. And
and increase your workload.
Well, if he wants to step up, that's a whole other technique to do it that way. And I've done that too. If you want to step it up, you can make a starter and step everything up from one cell if you're really good at it, and you can do that. But again, it's a whole different technique to doing it. Most people don't want to do all this trouble, so they want to do it as easy as they can.
Well, and you mentioned hops, and my understanding is that the antimicrobial properties of hops. What happens is the hop isoalpha acids, they actually will coat the outside of a cell like a bacteria cell, right? And that's what stops the bacteria cell and reduces viability of the cell. Same thing happens with yeast. The higher the amount of isoalpha acids, polymerized isoalpha acid in the wort, more coating effect you have on the yeast cells, the viability goes down. The higher your IBUs, the lower your viability. So you really don't want to add hops to your, right. your starter. It's really just going to impact viability, the thing that you're trying to actually build. If you're adding hops because you're thinking, oh, well, it helps, you know, with sanity, you know, keeps the more you know, contamination down and helps protect it. If that's the kind of problem you have, then you got a much bigger problem than, you know, you maybe shouldn't be making starters. You should be buying packets of dry yeast and going that route.
Yeah, hops will help inhibit you know, wort spoilers. But, yeah, as you say, if that is an issue, you're better off really focusing on your upstream sanitation and preventing it there rather than worrying about adding enough hops to the wort. Focus on the yeast and don't worry about
it. Save yourself a little bit. Put it in your beer instead.
I did read somewhere once when I first started making starters was if it makes you feel better and you just got to throw some hops in, I throw a pellet in there and call it good.
Right, yeah, yeah. But again, logically,
no
hops. You go without the hops. So, Doc, maybe you could walk us through, you know, what a person starting out, how they make a starter. Give us, you know, all the steps. Give us volumes. Give us measurements, things like that, temperatures.
Typically what I do is I get everything out first. I'll get out the Erlenmeyer. I usually do the Arrowhead dispenser and just dispense out the water. You can probably use tap water, though I don't trust my tap water on that because I have a well. Just one more thing, even though I'm going to be boiling it. Mm-hmm.
You probably don't want chlorinated water or anything like that.
Anything like that. So I just go in and fill it up. And depending on how big Erlenmeyer that I'm using that time or what I'm pitching into, usually fill it to maybe around the 2,000 milliliter mark because I've got the big Erlenmeyer too. So I'll get that in there, get everything out. I'll measure out. I like what you say. It's about a 10 to 1. So it's milligrams and going into milliliters. Mm-hmm. So 100 milligrams and or 200 milligrams into 2,000 milliliters. That's going to work. I weighed it out and it's about three quarters of a cup, and I think something like that. Mm-hmm. I just measured. I don't remember exactly what it was. It's pretty easy though.
Yeah.
You basically want about a 10-40 beer, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't want a big strong starter. Mm-hmm. Just enough to keep them happy, but not overwhelm them. You don't want to stress them at all. I'll get the water started boiling. Once it gets boiling on there, I like to use a mixing bowl, a stainless steel mixing bowl, kind of a round bottom one. I'll put all the dry stuff, the dry ingredients in the DME in there. I also put my yeast nutrient in there right then. Mm-hmm. That way I don't forget. I'll pour about half of the liquid.
How much yeast nutrient are you using?
I use a Servomyces capsule now. Mm-hmm. I just put one of those in there because it'll transfer over depending on how much I'm going to put in there too. Mm-hmm. Or it's pretty small beer. I'll just pour a pinch of diammonium phosphate, whatever I happen to have on hand that I didn't run out of the other stuff kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's not that big a deal, but I want something in there.
Mm-hmm.
Water's boiling. I've got the dry ingredients in the mixing, basically round bottom cake mixing bowl. I'll pour it in there about half the volume. The thing that I found is everything lumps up.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing to stir it with is an egg whisk. Works great. Just stir it like you're beating some eggs, and it breaks up all those things. I've tried forks. I've tried spoons with holes in them. I've tried wood. It makes those clumps in there, and I hate it. But this
good stainless steel whisk. That's a good idea.
It works great. It breaks them all up. Once that's there, then ingredient is some foam control at that point. I'll put a few drops into that, and then a funnel, pour it back into the Erlenmeyer. I take the Erlenmeyer off of the stove because if you spill because maybe you had a couple beers or whatever, you don't want to spill all over the stove because it makes it hard again to clean that up and not get yelled at. So I'll put a hot pot pad or a trivet or something in the sink and then pour it into there. Use a funnel because you will miss a little bit. Get it back in there. Make sure you use the foam control and then put it back on the stove and then bring it up to boil again. With the foam control, you're going to notice that it doesn't boil over. You got to be a little careful because if you put it right back and a lot of high heat, it might still foam depending on how high you have it near the neck of it. But with a Erlenmeyer, it's got a very narrow neck, kind of like a bottleneck on there, and it really
quick.
It will boil quick and boil over quick. So if you don't use the foam control, you're going to see a worse boiling over problem and all of the stove again. So you got to be careful. Once the foam control's in there, it's almost a no-brainer. You almost don't have to watch it. Boil it. I usually boil it for probably 15 minutes maybe. And it doesn't have to be a raging boil. Just so it's boiling, churning things up. And you'll see it'll get actually clear after a little while. Then I just cover it with some foam. Foil. Put it on the other burner and let it cool down a little bit. And then it's going to go back in the sink into a water bath. Because I want it cooled down as fast as I can so I can pitch it.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing, another little trick that I use is I take a meat rack, this roast rack that you would use to keep it off the bottom of the pan. And I put that in the sink. That way I'm going to have water flow underneath the Erlenmeyer. So I got a lot more surface area. So it's going to be able to help cool it down a lot faster. It's not a good idea to submerge the flask in above what the internal water line, liquid line is.
Oh.
You could actually crack the Erlenmeyer, even though it's the borosilicate. You could still probably do that. So usually I just bring the level all the way up to even inside and outside. Depending on how much volume you have there, how fast you want to do it, you might have to change the water. But the 5,000 milliliter Erlenmeyer with 4,000 milliliters in it, it's a lot of liquid, so it can heat up the sink water pretty well, too. You can put some ice in there. It depends on what you want to do. Cool it down as fast as you can, and then you can pitch into that. I use a stir plate. If I don't use the oxygenate, even with a stir plate, I'll just let the stir plate do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I will. I'll use a wand and put it in there. Or if I'm making several starters side by side because I'm doing different yeast pitches into one batch, I separate the batches out and I'll do that. I only have one stir plate.
Mm-hmm.
I had two, but one went down. But if I'm going to do that, I'll oxygenate the one that's not on the stir plate.
When you put your wand in, the bar for the stir plate, did you boil it?
No, I don't boil the bar. I just use star sand for that.
Okay.
Let that go.
I've gotten a lactobacillus beer, I think, from my stir plate bar.
If you do boil the bar, and you can put it in your Erlenmeyer and boil it in there. The problem is, if that's not moving around, it's got a metal interior. That's like a Teflon coated bar. The thing is, if it's just sitting there, it absorbs a lot of heat. You can melt those. I've actually melted those before.
Another way is when you pull it off the heat, you put your bar in right then.
That'll
sanitize it, and it's not sitting on the burner at the same time.
Here's another tip: when you
put that bar in there, you're going to want to tilt the Erlenmeyer and slide it down the side. If you drop it straight down, it'll crack the bottom of the Erlenmeyer. Yeah. I mean, pretty good chance of it, anyways.
I've done that.
So we were talking about the ratio of DME to water. You go 1 gram DME for every 10 mils of final volume of liquid, and that gives you about 1040, maybe a little bit less, depending on the type of DME and the moisture in the air and all that. Now, why are we doing this strength of starter, this gravity of starter, the 1035 to 1040 range? Well, why is that important? People will also say, hey, you're making a strong beer, you got to make a strong starter so the yeast get acclimated to that. The yeast will buff up and get all ready to do high alcohol.
Well, again, as you're trying to grow yeast, you're trying to build yeast, you're not trying to necessarily make the beer at this point. So while there is a certain amount of truth to, grow your yeast in a representative wort or representative conditions to what the beer is going to be, you don't necessarily want to throw them into a high gravity beer, because shock is shock. I mean, if you're trying to get these yeast to settle down and start growing, you give them a gentle environment and let them grow on their own right. 1040 works really well.
Osmotic shock is just as bad as a thermal shock.
Yeah. And also, they don't truly, get used to, alcohol or anything like that. And on the opposite side, now why don't you go to as low as possible a gravity? If the higher the gravity, the harder stress on the yeast, why don't you go 10.5, 1 Plato, 2 Plato work?
There's just not enough food there to really support them. I mean, it's like
you won't be able to grow very much yeast.
Yeah, and there's just not, yeah, there's not enough food for that population of yeast to do much with.
You won't, you'll go through all the trouble, you'll end up only with a very small increase in number of cells.
That's right. So 1040 is really a good compromise between good yeast growth and all the other factors you get. You know, you basically get a good return on your growth rate.
And, they know what the concentration is of the yeast around them as well as the sugar solution, and they're going to replicate according to that.
Well, and I've also heard, when you're growing something up, something, let's say you've had a yeast that's been highly stressed, or you're pulling it off a real old slant or plate, you're going to want to start with, say, something around 1020, around 5 Plato wort, and it's, gentler on the cells. It's easier for them. They don't have to struggle keeping, sugars and, other things outside the cell and, keeping that osmotic balance. And so it's easier for them, yet there's enough to just get them started. And once you get them started and you've got some cell growth, then you take that and then you go to a 1040 10 Plato wort for your growth.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I've talked to Chris White and other yeast experts about it. You hear different opinions, but I think the general consensus is you don't have to be that nice to them. That 1040 is the best compromise, and once in a while you'll run into a set of yeast that need some coddling, but generally they don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think you get those plates. I do a lot of plating of some strains I want to save that I can't get from the major yeast companies.
That's true.
And I'm real lazy, and so I'll leave those plates.
But you'll still plate them.
They'll be sitting in the fridge for a year, 2 years, and they're all pretty much done in at that point, and they're looking pretty crusty, and I think I get a better result going to a real gentle start on those. I get a better chance of pulling some of them off the brink and getting them going again.
That's probably true. Yeah, with the slant.
Probably the best advice is not to let them go for 2 years.
I think I have a few crusty ones back there on slants, like that. And when I used to, I don't even do that anymore. But when I used to build them up, I would start very small, like a 10 milliliter. I had a little flask, a bigger flask, and build them up about 10 at a time.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll get deeper into starters, how you do it, and what the benefits are. Back after this.
Brew right. Brew smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong. Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty Christmas you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
What have you gotten out of a vial of White Labs yeast?
WLP-001, Cal Ale, baby!
23, Burton Ale.
008, East Coast Ale.
Cal Common, WLP-810.
It's gonna be WLP-400 with beer!
I got a sweet hoodie for my vial.
Huh?
White Labs, your source for great brewer's yeast, would like to invite all homebrewers to join the White Labs Customer Club. Redeem your empty vials for great White Labs merchandise and products. Free yeast, glassware, t-shirts, baseball caps, sweatshirts, polo shirts, and you won't believe what you'll get for 5,000 vials. Members also receive a newsletter packed with White Labs updates and facts, interviews with professional brewers, brew your own clone recipes, beercook.com recipes, and customer club stories. The White Labs Customer Club. Save your vials and get in the club. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
Brewing Network.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing.
This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking starters, everything about them, how to make them, why you would, all et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Nick is here, is new to the studio. Everyone's like, oh, where the hell did this guy come from? But
I knew my name.
Yeah, you know, a long-time fan, first time sitting in the studio, whatever the hell.
How is it?
Oh, it's amazing. You know, I was going to say, I think I'm your quintessential, you know, BN listener, the one who never participates in the forums, but just kind of sits back there in the corner, soaking up all the information. And I learned to brew from two sources. It's amazing. Number one, it's this book here, How to Brew.
Thank you.
And then the second thing was from the Brewing Network. It started about the time I learned to brew. Everything I learned came from here, yet I'm one of those guys, I didn't quite participate in maybe all of the Brewing Network activities, although I did go to the anniversary party. And let me tell you, if there's one place to go, it's Oktoberfest. If it's two, it's the BN anniversary party. It's a good time.
If it's three, Lenny's down by the river.
Did you know how international you are? The Brewing Network. Apparently you did. I was in the Hofbrau tent. Now you can imagine here in this Oktoberfest, 10,000 people.
One tent.
All standing on the tables. I take a double take. A guy runs by wearing a hop grenade shirt. Oh, my goodness. And I'm in full lederhosen regalia. You know, I drank too much the night before, and I went to a, clothing shop and ended up spending all this money, so I have to wear it. And here's this guy. So I chase him down, and I'm like, oh, man, I heard Justin was around here. Have you seen any of the BN cast? No. And so we get to talking, and he's like, God, I love, the Jamil show, and I'm really looking forward, to the rest of the episodes of the Brew Strong show. And I'm thinking, here I am, 7,000 miles away from home, and I run into a fellow beer lover who's experienced by the same show, and loves it. So what do? The only appropriate thing, let's give Jamil a drunk call. So this guy, but first he's saying like, oh, I love the Jamil show, I love Brew Strong. And then he runs into the guy who happens to have, Jamil on dial here. So sure, we call him up, and of course, I wasn't paying attention to what time it was. It was probably 2 in the morning, I get Jamil, and he's like, oh, good to hear from you, I think, but we...
Yeah, I didn't know what to say, I was intrigued with a drunk dial from Oktoberfest, as anybody would. Any good beer lover would be. But I think it was 10 o'clock in the morning, in the middle of the work, things are going on, and I'm thinking, this would be much more entertaining if I had a couple of beers in me, and I think that was my only disappointment, that it wasn't 5 o'clock and I had already, pulled one off the kegerator there.
It goes to show you, though, how something that you're doing here, labor of love, it seems like, you're really reaching out, hitting a lot of people, and I probably would have taken me 10 years to learn what I have in two. By listening, you catch up with the Sunday shows, the Jamil show, got Brew Strong. I mean, we're in a room with John Palmer. This is like my number one. This is my number one.
Don't worry, that'll fade.
It still sits on my toilet, this book, John.
Thank you. That's good to hear.
I mean, every morning.
And John sits on our toilet every couple of weeks, too. It's gone full circle.
As soon as he starts hitting you up for money, it all fades.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see, pages of the book aren't torn out. I mean, given its location, it's
sticky,
nice.
Sticky, maybe.
Yeah. Every once in a while, the roll runs shy.
Yeah.
There's always the backup.
Well, apparently I ripped out the part on yeast starters after this show, what I'm learning, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, let's get back to yeast starters. So a couple of things that were brought up. We talked nutrients, right?
Yeah.
And you were talking about throwing in some cervomyces or whatever you have. Why yeast has a good nutrient. I think you want something with some zinc, one of the key nutrients that the yeast are going to need to grow. And this is usually, you know, people think of the sugars that are needed for the yeast to grow, but there's some real key nutrients: oxygen, zinc, amino acids, and nitrogen. That's mm-hmm. the basic cooking pot of really the core stuff that they need, and that zinc's pretty important.
Right.
And you can get that through the cervomyces, you get that through the White Labs yeast nutrient, I believe, or you can just add something with some zinc in it, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Right. Malt-based things have a lot of nutrients that they need, too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you're making a starter, you want to give them things that doesn't have zinc or enough zinc in it.
So. Zinc tends to drop out during hop break.
Yeah.
It tends to get bound up in the hop break and drop out, so that's why some extra zinc is useful in the beer.
Yeah, here's one other thing. What about distilled water versus regular old tap water? I think one of the advantages of regular old tap water is it's going to have some calcium in it. It's going to probably have some magnesium. A lot of things that are actually fairly important to yeast, the yeast metabolism and the success of the yeast to grow.
That's right.
And proper health there, right?
Well, you're using DME.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically dehydrated wort.
And it's going to have some minerals
have stuff
in it.
And you don't know how much it's got in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I probably going to start going to, once in a while I do a extract batch. I'm going to probably start going to just straight RO water on my straight extract batches. Mm-hmm. It's in there. It's just right. concentrated. Right. And I don't want to overload on other things. And what you're talking about is not a bad idea to use the tap water. Mm-hmm. Distilled water might be a little too clean. Mm-hmm. We're talking about yeast nutrients.
Right.
And those chemicals that are in there, the ions that are in, that's nutrients for them. It's building blocks.
Because you're trying to maximize growth.
Right. And they're not just eating. You're not just feeding them. You're trying to get them to make enzymes, to make cell walls, to make different proteins. Mm-hmm. And they need the building blocks to do that because they're trying to multiply. They don't multiply out of thin air.
Well, now, speaking of thin air and cell walls, one of the most important things to cell wall permeability and the abilities of the yeast to bud and have enough pliability in order to bud off another cell is the sterols that are used in the cell wall makeup, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in order to make those, they need either oxygen or some sort of substitute, maybe from fatty acids.
Fatty acids, yeah.
That they can do. Now, when you and I make starters, we count on the stir plate to bring in enough
right.
oxygen. And, I've heard people go, well, no, that can't be happening because, you've got the starter covered and, you're not blowing bubbles into it. And really, the most critical thing on oxygen exchange, oxygenation of any liquid is really, the surface area, the amount mm-hmm. of surface area that is being exchanged across the air that contains the oxygen
or back into the water,
right?
And if you're just having a solid part, just water just sitting there,
mm-hmm.
you're not getting the water molecules back to the surface to reuptake.
Mm-hmm.
And by stirring, it's going right. to make a lot more surface area.
Right, you're exchanging that. Imagine spreading that starter out thin. You get a little bit of a vortex kind of starting. You're exchanging a huge amount of surface area continuously throughout there. It's actually far more effective. One of the things you find, shaking a carboy actually will add oxygen to it because you're, again, exchanging that surface layer. You can get that exchange going. You'll actually pick up a considerable amount of oxygen as compared to, say, something like an aquarium pump.
Right. Let's look at carbonating in a keg. Goes in faster when you shake it
mm-hmm.
because you're shaking, you're splashing around in there, mm-hmm. so it gets more surface area. The liquid does with contact with the atmosphere that's in there.
I did a lot of aquarium type of stuff, mm-hmm. a lot of aquaculture and years ago. And the thing I learned there was all those bubbling air stones and all that. Yeah. The sole purpose of that is to exchange liquid from the bottom of the tank to the surface of the tank. you don't actually pick anything up, really, or very little up from the bubbles themselves. The bubbles are to rotate the liquid from the bottom to the top, exchange that top surface layer, and that's where your oxygen exchange occurs.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's the same thing. The same thing in making beer or starters or something like that. So the stir plate, very effective. You can shake. I know one thing Graham Sanders does. He's popularized using a 2-liter soda bottle. You put your starter wort in there. You squeeze out all the air. You can shake it up and exchange the air each time, and then shake it up. And every once in a while, you squeeze out the carbon dioxide, let in fresh air, and shake it again, and you get tremendous growth. And no oxygenation stone or starter plate or anything.
The oxygenation stone is just to make the bubbles smaller. So smaller bubbles are more surface area.
Right.
Big bubbles. Imagine one big bubble is bubbling to the top. It's not going to be there very, very long, and you're not going to get a lot of exchange. The main thing is we just drove all of the oxygen out of the liquid by boiling it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not there anymore. That's why you got to put it back.
Good point. Now, what about the types of sugars? I know people go, I got this priming sugar left over. I keg, and each kit comes with this little bag of priming sugar. I can just make my starters with that, right?
No.
Yes and no.
Right.
Because of everything we just talked about. The priming sugar has no nutrients in it.
Right.
And there's more nutrients in the wort, the DME, that we make up that we can't put in there. And the yeast use a lot of those things.
Yeah.
So if you just use it as pure sugar and put nothing in it, no, you just can't. You're not going to get what you want out of the starter. Why bother wasting your time doing this? Because you're not going to get what you want.
Well, and also one of the problems that's going to happen is the yeast become quickly lazy. They stop making the enzymes that they need in
maltose,
order to ferment maltose. So they won't be able to break the maltose down and take those sugars in. If they get used to simple sugars. This is one of the problems with a wort comprised of lots of simple sugars. At a certain point, the yeast will just consume the simple sugars first. They always start with the simplest sugars first, and then they move on to the more complex sugars. And if they get to a point where the growth has been fueled by these simple sugars, they don't bother to produce the enzymes that allow them to break down the maltose. And so when you put them in your wort, they stop when they get to the maltose, and you get a very low attenuation.
That's
so you got to use that a maltose-based sugar in order to grow your yeast. Now, that doesn't mean it was made from malt. You can go with rice syrups. A lot of times are 90% maltose. Even that would work.
So. There's a lot of things. You're talking about the enzymes not wanting to make the enzymes. Mm-hmm. To break down the maltose. Why would they if they don't have to? You got to look at it from their standpoint. It takes their energy to make these enzymes, making these proteins, putting them together so they can use the available food. Well, they're not going to expend that energy if they don't have to. So they're going to not make the maltase.
That's right.
And they're going to just eat what they can. When they're done eating, they don't care. They're just kind of done. They're not going to... They're not in that kind of phase where they're trying to grow, trying to get ready to consume what's out there.
So what do you do then? You've got this nice big, let's say 3-liter starter going, and that wort, obviously's nutrients have been used by the yeast. They've kind of come out of suspension. What if it's an active starter? Let's say you want to pitch that right into your beer. Depending on the style of beer, and I wondered this for ages. Is that DME that I use going to affect the flavor of my 5-gallon or 10-gallon batch of beer? Should I decant it off? Is there something wrong with it? And like I said, it's not hopped. It was only boiled for a few minutes. What do I do with that?
That always goes back to me is what kind of beer is it? If I'm pitching into a Helles, I'm decanting. Mm-hmm. Because if anything light like that, I'm more likely to not want to pitch in some of these extract flavors, especially if it's a big starter that we're doing. And when you're doing a lager, you better have a big starter. I'm not going to put that in there. I have a tendency to crash it somewhat, so I get just a layer of yeast on the bottom, get it out of there, and then I decant. Now, if I'm doing an oatmeal stout, it's going to be a lot less of an issue about the flavor going in there, and I make it easy.
That's a great question. I think I'm very much along the same lines as Doc in that it depends on the beer. If I'm making an average gravity ale, then, you know, my starter size is going to be fairly small, and I probably just pitch the whole thing right in when it's at the height of activity.
Right.
If I'm making anything bigger than that and I need a larger starter, or if I'm making any kind of lager, I tend to you know, just grow the yeast, let it completely finish out. I put it in the fridge, let it all settle out. Yeah. I decant the spent wort, and then day of brewing, I'll take that thick yeast slurry and I'll add it back to maybe you know, a pint of wort, and just kind of get it active for a couple hours, and then I'll toss that into my beer.
Which wort? The new beer that you just brewed?
Starter wort. I actually can my starter wort, so I'll make a, you know, a starter wort. I'll make 5 gallons up in quart mason jars, and then I'll just use as needed. I've got sterile wort anytime.
That's something I used to do. I used to, when I would boil, you could only get so much of the wort out of there, and you still got a lot of crud in the bottom of there.
Oh, yeah.
And if you ever poured it into, it's cooled, I pour it into a big growler, something like that, put in the refrigerator, and it'll all settle out, and all the tubes in the bottom. I'll decant that off, and then I put it in a canet.
Well, Jamil, you said you pitched something at the height of activity. Okay, so I know what 5 gallons of fermenting beer looks like, but how do I know when I'm the height of activity in an Erlenmeyer flask or in a, you know, a 2-liter bottle?
Well, you know, that's going to depend on a lot of factors, and you know, experience will be your guide. Now, if you ferment out a starter without a stir plate, you'll see, you know, you get the high croizen, you get all that. That's about the time. Generally, all you really need to have happen in a starter is, you know, the growth. And the growth is all done within, you know, mostly between 12 to 18, but, you know, by 36 hours, all your growth is done. It's ready to pitch, for all intents and purposes. The only reason you might go longer is that it's kind of stuck in the, you know, in the liquid, and you want to, you know, decant that and get from the volume of liquid.
That's, yeah, that's that Zen part that you and I talk about.
Right.
When's the beer done? I don't want to take that out
by,
of yet.
You do it by feel.
It is, and every time I'm thinking about my conical, am I going to pull that
we'll
out
get,
of there?
We'll get back to our feelings about starters just after
feelings.
This.
Come
on. This is Brew Strong. We'll be right back.
What's good for the earth, good for your body, and great for your brew? Organic ingredients. This holiday season, the organic ingredient experts, Seven Bridges Co-op in awesome Santa Cruz, California, offers you the gift that keeps on giving to our planet. Sustainable, fair wage ingredients to make the best organic homebrew you've ever had. There's a growing demand for organic products, and your choice to brew with them supports organic farmers worldwide. Brew organic, and you'll brew excellent beer that is free from chemical residues and genetically modified organisms, and you'll help contribute to a better world. If you're looking for organic ingredients, Seven Bridges offers a huge selection of USDA-certified kits and raw ingredients from 8 ounces to 50-pound sacks of grain, whole and pellet hops, and all the equipment you need. Seven Bridges, the organic homebrew experts since 1997. Visit www.breworganic.com.
Attention homebrew shop owners at Fermentap. They know you're tired of buying the same old gear that everyone else has. That's why Fermentap offers the newest and most cutting-edge brewing equipment known to man. Since 1998, Fermentap has been leading the fight against the boring and mundane by offering strange, unique, and just plain smart equipment. Like their stainless-domed false bottoms. Never deal with the floating plastic hassle of other false bottoms again. And since they're made from stainless steel, they'll last a lifetime. Fermentap's line of copper wort chillers are the best on the market, designed to cool your wort faster and more efficiently than other immersion chillers. They actually invented the equipment to make these chillers not only work great, but look great too. How about a fantastic line of ingredients, including vanilla beans, sorghum extract, blue agave extract, hop bitterness extract, unique wine yeasts, green coffee beans, sake kits, all stuff you can't find anywhere else. Fermentap carries all the standard products and equipment you need as well, such as all grain systems, stainless hardware, kettles, carbonation stones, you name it, they've got it. Fermentap's entire line of products has been helping retail shops meet the demands of their customers for nearly 10 years, and they want to help you too. For more information, see them on the web at fermentap.com or call Jason at 1-800-942-2750. Fermentap, better beer through innovation.
Did you know that every day a brewcaster goes to bed hungry? Did you know that that brewcaster is silently calling for the help of people just like you? Do you know that every day the unicorn and the rainbow have to blow sailors for loose change? For less than the cost of a half-calf, quad-shot, venti, extra-hot soy milk, triple-pump, hazel, low-fat foam, double-cupped macchiato a day, you can help starving adults in Pacheco. Your love can be felt for as little as 7 cents a day. Visit thebrewingnetwork.com/donate to sign up today for as little as $2 a month. Private first class in the BN Army. Buy your way up the ranks as corporal, sergeant, ranger, or colonel with an easy-to-do monthly donation that keeps brewcasters alive and your favorite internet radio station broadcasting. No donation is too small to help those in need. Can't you find it in your heart to share your love with a brewcaster? In return, you will enjoy the wealth of knowledge that comes with every episode of The Session, The Jameel Show, and yes, even that other show. Thank you for listening, and please sign up for your donation at thebrewingnetwork.com/donate today.
You're listening to The Brewing Network.
Back to your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're talking starters with our guest in the studio here, Dr. Scott.
Hey, let me know if I'm talking too much.
Oh, never, never. Love to hear your
experience and wisdom
on making great beer, and starters is a big part of it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's definitely.
Maybe one of the key components to making great beer?
Yeah, it gets me in the mode of making beer. I know I start, maybe sometimes I'll start on a Wednesday if I'm going to be brewing on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
It depends if I'm stepping them up, if I'm brewing a lager, whatever it is, but it's like now I'm and actually it commits me to be brewing. I just know, like, maybe I'll do it tomorrow kind of thing. I know I'm doing it because I've got that starter going.
Now, we did an informal poll here in the studio, and it sounds like all of us put foil over the top of our Erlenmeyer flasks to seal them up.
Yep.
Now, why not an airlock? Why not a solid stopper? Why not, saran wrap and a rubber band?
Yeah, you want
condom.
Good oxygen flow. You want good airflow. You want the CO2 to come out of the starter because that will inhibit the growth of the yeast. You want some more oxygen to get to it, and there's a little natural law that germs don't fall up.
Yeah.
So if you put foil loosely over the top of the Erlenmeyer and extend it down over the edges, that provides a natural bacteria barrier, but it still allows gas flow, gas exchange underneath and around.
Yeah,
and
it's usually
it's usually a positive flow that's coming out.
Right.
Also, it's Chris White and I have talked about quite a bit about having no head pressure on the wort, and that seems to stimulate them a lot better, which we go with these open cool ships and why they ferment what they do, and probably it has to do with the type of yeast they're using. But there's no head pressure on it is a plus in yeast growth.
I think, John, you brought up an excellent point is, CO2 inhibits cell growth and activity, and that's one of the things like high-pressure lager yeast, why they're able to ferment lagers warmer is they use this yeast, they keep it under a certain level of CO2 pressure, and that CO2 pressure restricts the activity of the yeast and keeps them down in ester production, things like that. And so you want to make sure you're getting rid of that. One of the things that the stir bar does on a stir plate is ensures that you're not building up CO2.
Right.
No gas is building up past whatever the regular solubility is there. You're not getting any super saturation of CO2 or anything like that.
I've got about 3 gallons on a stir plate right now.
Yeah, you're king of the big stir plate and the big starter.
Yeah, you know, God shortchanged me on the height thing, so I'm going to make up for it some way.
In the big-ass starter.
Yeah.
It's impressive, I must admit. I, you know, see one of them things going, and stir bars rotating sounds like, you know, the prop on a C-52.
Like, it sounds like something's cut in glass, and you can hear it in the other room. It's loud.
Yeah, so who's mowing the lawn?
Yeah.
No, it's just Doc's stir plate going.
Yeah.
Making yeast.
Yeah, okay. So a loose-fitting cover that just keeps stuff from dropping in. That's where all the bacteria and wild yeast are. It's on the dust in the air, and as it just drops out of the air, air's full of that dust, and that's what you need to be careful.
There's a lot of advantages just having that loose-fitting foil over it. Nice and low-tech, too. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't think we answered Graham's question. How do we know when the starter's done? How do I know?
Or when to pitch.
Finished. Yeah.
Well, in a stir plate, it's really hard because you're just seeing this suspension constantly. Mm-hmm. It really, you know, it's hard to tell in appearance of looking through the Erlenmeyer or juice bottle, whatever you have on the stir plate. It still looks cloudy and yeasty from start to finish. You may pick up a little difference in color, a little difference in...
It becomes milkier as you get a certain... When the growth peaks, it stops getting milkier in color, or darker, more opaque in color, and you know you've gotten all your growth.
But I think you really do gotta trust to the time that's been on that plate and say, you know, 18, 24 hours, it's at kind of peak activity. After 36, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I used to think, well, you know, it still looks like it might be doing something. I'd leave it on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after that 36 hours, you know, with constant oxygen access, and if the yeast have used up all the available sugars in that starter wort, now they're going to start attacking their own internal, you know, trehalose and reserves and so on.
Glucose,
to you know, sustain themselves because they've got the oxygen.
Maintain the cell walls.
Yeah, and they're looking for more nutrients. So they're going to start using up all the reserves they've just built up in the growth phase. So you don't want to leave your yeast on a stir plate too long. So I'd say, 36 hours max, and pull it off and pitch it, or you know, put it in the fridge and let it settle out.
One rule of thumb that I always kind of think, that's what comes in with experience, is that feel for it. You know, it's a lighter beer. It's a 10:30 beer or 10:40 beer. Right. Just think of it, if it was 5 gallons, how long would it take for that thing to ferment out at whatever you're fermenting at? And everybody's watching their beer when they pitch it. 5 gallons, it's gone, it's down. Oh, good. And you know your beer, you know your system, you know your environment. 2 days, probably, maybe three, depending on how, for a 10:30, 10:40 beer. Think that direction, and you're going to know when it's going to peak and when it's going to start coming down again.
Well, Jamil and John Plisse have talked a lot about knowing your yeast, and if, you know, for example, you're going to be...
In the biblical sense, we
Yes. Yeah, know thy own yeast. Yes, in the biblical. Well, that's... Talented man, if you can know your yeast that way. But the
takes
helps
a small,
have the right size equipment.
Yeah. Precise
that's
equipment,
right.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of head pressure.
Yeah.
So the
through that cell wall.
If you're pitching like an Oktoberfest yeast, you know that could take, at least I know White Labs version. You know that could take maybe 4 or 5 days before I see that really kind of come out.
Right.
You know, in activity. But if it's a 10:56, you know, like John was saying, maybe 24 to 36 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd hate to pitch it and then not actually, you know, get the value of that starter. If,
well, maybe you wouldn't get 100% of the value of the starter, but you're going to get some
glycogen reserves and
you're going to get that kind of thing. But what John was saying, so you don't want to let it go down so far that they're just starting to shut down shop.
Right. You know, you're okay for a couple of days, but don't forget it there and leave it there all week, you know.
Unless you're
going to
feed it
days.
Again. You can feed them again.
Right.
You can do that. There's some things you can do.
You can continue to step. Well, and that's a good segue into our other question, which is how big a starter do I need? What amount of wort do I need, or you know, what amount of yeast do I need? What's the answer there?
Well, I like what the graph you brought out before, and what you said was you can pitch them all into up to about 5 gallons, but you're not going to get any more out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's diminishing returns. There is a curve here that we've got. Whatever your peak is, how much do you need though? You're pitching into 5 gallons, or like me, you're pitching into 25 gallons. You're going to need a bigger starter. You might not be able to do a huge starter at first, and that's where you're going to come into stepping up.
Well, the interesting thing on this curve is I did a massive number of starter experiments and a massive number of cell counts until I was bleary-eyed. I spent, you know, a good, you know, 6 months of doing nothing but cell counts. I did like a year and a half of testing on this thing, and I came up with all these data points. I did all these curves, and I came up with, you know, I could tell how much yeast will grow given, you know, an endless supply or whatever, and there's certain returns. For example, you can take a smack pack, an XL smack pack of Y yeast, or a vial of White Labs, and you put that into 2 liters of wort, no stir plate, just 2 liters of a 1040 wort, and you're going to get a doubling of the amount of yeast. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much a fact. Now, you can't do 20 liters and expect to get 10 times as much yeast. Doesn't work that way. 20 years is pretty much about the limit. You're gonna get a lesser return. There's limiting factors in nutrients and you know, the cell walls and things like that. It isn't gonna grow endlessly. And the interesting thing is, you know, it's got certain cycles that it goes through. The interesting thing is that when I was doing this, Greg Doss from Y Yeast was doing similar experiments, totally independent of what I was doing. When through happenstance, we compared numbers. They were asking me about doing a pitching rate calculator for them.
Shocker.
We compared numbers, and you know, my curve and his curve were nearly identical. There was a slight difference. Mine went a little bit higher, and it may have to do with my counting method versus his. He was using a spectrophotometer to count, and the interesting thing was they were pretty much identical. So we're quite sure of this data. And my pitching rate calculator and the Y-East pitching rate calculator use the same formula for that. So anyways, I just thought that was really fascinating. There's a limit to the amount that you can do. Right. And your practical limit before you're getting such a small return on the amount of yeast is probably about 8 liters for a vial or a package.
Right.
And you know, the 4 to 6 liter range is probably ideal. You know, you're not throwing away much there.
That's when it comes step starting comes in. If you need to grow a whole lot of yeast, doesn't mean just make a huge starter and throw that pack in there. It's not going to do it. So you're saying you're going to get diminishing returns. You can put in 8 liters, you can put in 20 liters, and close to the same, a little bit more, but not as much. It's better to start normally with an 8 liter thing and then take that 8 liters and go into the 20 liters. You're going to get a lot more oomph for it out of there. That's why you want to step them. Mm-hmm. If you think you need more yeast, you're gonna have to get them from somewhere, and growing them just by putting them in a bigger wort, it's not gonna do it.
Yeah. Well, but use the pitching rate calculator on Jamil's mm-hmm. website, MrMulti.com, because that does simplify all these factors. You can put in the numbers and get an answer.
Get an exact answer. But in our book, John, we Brewing Classic Styles, which you can pick up in the Brewing Network store, brewingnetwork.com.
Got a copy around here.
Store.
Yeah.
And we have a chart in there that gives you kind of a quick and dirty breakdown of you know, what size starter you want, how many vials would go into that, and all that.
Right. We took the pitching rate calculator and then churned out some numbers from it and put that into a table form. Table 5 in Appendix A gives you the amount of liters of starter to make, number of yeast vials or yeast or smack packs to add to that volume of starter to get a certain cell count out. Now, in Brewing Classic Styles, what we did to kind of simplify this, instead of saying, oh, you need 150 billion cells, you know, for a 5-gallon batch, we said you want to use 2 yeast packs or 3 yeast packs for this particular recipe. And so this table 5 in the back of the book kind of helped you identify how many vials you should start with and how many liters of starter wort to add that to get the amount of yeast that we have in the recipe.
Now, we've also been talking about ales and lagers and you know, how you need more yeast for a lager and all this, but one common question I get all the time is, now, do I need to make my lager starters at lager temperatures, or can I do them at room temperature like my ale starters?
Well, yeah, you can grow the yeast at room temp, and you know that's great for yeast growth. But you're going to want to chill that starter down and decant it in the fridge and so on. Yeah. And get, basically take your yeast back to zero. You know, get them back to a ground state. And then when you pitch them to your wort, it's going to be at you know at your pitching temperature. They're gonna acclimate to that temperature. Especially if you know if they've been part of a good healthy starter, they'll acclimate quickly. But if you throw them from room temperature
right.
starter to a cold wort, they're going to go into thermal shock. So yeah, you can grow them at room temp, but that you're going to need to put them in the fridge and chill them down, and so that when they see that new wort, it's not a hot to cold thermal shock.
That's kind of what I do too. When I'm doing a lager yeast starter, I do them at room temperature. They grow better. They're going to grow normal, and it's a pain in the butt to put the stir plate in the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But at that temperature, my lager yeast are going to throw off all kinds of esters that I don't want in my beer, and it goes back to your question right. about do I decant?
Right.
Yeah, I want to decant then because yep. I'm going to have all the kinds of that. But if it's all churned up at 70 degrees, I'm going to be pouring a lot of my yeast out too. So then I've got to put it in refrigerator. But then, Jamil, I've talked also about thermal shock when you're starting to lower the temperature of these guys, and they're going to put up a protein coat and get angry on us. If you've got a pretty big starter, I just put it in the refrigerator, and it does take them down at a fairly slow rate, a few degrees per hour maybe, as long as it's a big enough starter. And I notice that they just start to flocculate better and better, and it's going to be going down fast. I don't crash them. I don't want them just to, mm-hmm. to freak out and thermal shock them that way.
Right. Takes a day or two to
yeah.
get down.
Yeah. So if maybe the night before I'm going to pitch, I'll put it in the refrigerator. If I'm going to pitch late at night, sometimes I do. After I get everything cleaned up and everything, maybe that morning I'll put the starter into the refrigerator. It layers out really nicely, really nice to decant it at that point. And I haven't thermal shocked them. I've gotten them down to the temperature for pitching. I get everything I want out of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the fact is you can grow yeast up to, you know, up to about 98 degrees Fahrenheit. You're going to get 37 degrees C. You're going to get more rapid yeast growth. And the reason you don't want to do that is you can affect your viability of the yeast and the stability. One thing with excessive or rapid yeast growth, you're going to get a lower unsaturated fatty acid concentration in the cell walls, and then mm-hmm. you know permeability and weaker cell walls from the problems from that. So you want to keep the temperature down a bit. Room temperature, you know, in the 65 to 75. You can go up into the
25 C. Yeah.
Yeah, you can go up in the warmer temperatures. With your lager yeast, you're going to want to keep it, let's say, below the 80s. In the ales, you can get up into the 80s. It's all right. One of the problems with the lager yeast, I think they're much more susceptible to the petite mutants, respiratory yes. deficient mutants, and when you get into those hot temperatures, you get into the 90s, you're definitely going to start generating those. Those yeast won't flocculate, they won't attenuate properly, you end up with a lot of problems.
You're changing
way.
The strain out pretty much, yeah. Like marrying your cousin. You just don't want to do that.
I don't know why.
It depends on what your cousin looks
why
like.
Why John Palmer doesn't have one of these, the yeast pitching rate calculator, you haven't put that into...
It's in the yeast chapter, actually, but my number is...
Clitorograph or whatever you call these things you do.
Nomograph, yeah.
Nomograph, there you go.
Do you call it a... What?
Well, I don't know. Clitorograph?
That's what I thought you said, a clitorograph.
Yeah. Oh, now that sounds interesting.
You start drawing the lines here.
That's a different book, though.
Well, that's why it stays on the toilet, you know?
I have that graph.
Burning your brain.
Yeah, another way to bring down temperatures, you can add a little bit of wort to your starter and cooler wort and bring it down that way, or and slowly lower it down. Put in a cold water bath or something like that, and bring it down a little bit towards your pitching temperature. But like Doc was saying, you go too rapid, they throw up the protein coat, you can cause all sorts of problems for your yeast.
How about this thought, and I haven't done this, but it sounded like a pretty nice idea. Maybe you have had the starter sitting around there too long. You want to feed him again. Taking some of the beer that you just made, the wort you have, and taking some of that. It's cold. You don't have to pitch for another 6 hours or so. Giving them some of that, acclimate them to what they're about to go into.
Mm-hmm.
Give that a try.
Right.
Feed them, get them going again.
And one of the things, another question I get from people a lot is, can't I just take a little bit of yeast? You know, if I got a 2-liter starter and I put a package of liquid yeast in there and it doubles it, can't I take, you know, a tenth of that package of liquid yeast, put it in there, and still end up with the same number of cells?
No.
There's a limit to the amount of growth you're going to get, right? There's that growth curve.
It's percentage,
and then there's also, the base cells that you start with. If you're starting with 100 billion, that's additive to whatever you're going to end up with. If you're starting with 10 billion, you're 90 billion short right there.
Well, that goes back to your curve. Taking one vial and putting it in 5 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's take a tenth of a vial and put it in 1 gallon.
Right. Not going to equate.
It's not going to equate.
Right. And so there's to some extent you can do that. You're not going to get quite the amount of growth. It'll hit that curve and it starts to fade out. So there are limits to it, and certainly you can extend your yeast that way. But you might be better off looking at repitching yeast.
Yes.
In order to if you're looking at cutting the costs down.
Yeah.
Now, Justin, do we have some questions from the chat room?
We do. A few questions for you guys. A lot of people enjoying the starter show today. Been a long time coming. Here's a good question somebody asked. Hey, if I ever get rich and can afford to buy 4 vials instead of making an equivalent starter, which method would then be better? 4 vials still built up from a starter, or just buying 4 vials?
That's Doc's lazy method.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
If I don't get around to making the starter, something comes up, I'll pitch 4 or 5 vials into.
You will.
Yeah.
And do you notice beer?
No, I always worry about the viability and the waking them up.
Yeah, there's a trade-off there.
There's a trade-off. Mm-hmm. I'm putting more in there, but they're still going to be a little sleepy. It'd be better off if I could put 2 vials into a quick starter and get them in there, too.
I'd use the extra money to pay your child to make the starter for
but,
you.
But I have done that. I have used that method. It's not a money-saving kind of thing. It's more of a, oops, or let's say
emergency.
Something happened with my starter. I've had a starter where stuff's growing on top that I just didn't trust. Maybe it should have been there. Maybe it shouldn't have. I just don't trust it. Or I wanted to change strains. I decided not to go with that strain that was in the starter. I changed beer directions. I've pitched a few more.
Well, Nick and I were talking about this on the drive out here, and one of the things is even if you had those 4 vials, you would want to put those into a little bit of starter, maybe 4 vials, let's say a 0.5 liter, and get those active before you put them into your beer, because like Doc's saying, they do tend to go dormant, and there are some things they could use some time to build up their glycogen reserves, things like that, get their cell walls in good shape again. So no matter what, unless it's coming fresh off the line from the yeast manufacturer, I would always do some sort of starter.
The same goes too if you're repitching from your slurry that you've had sitting for a while. You store your yeast for 2 weeks. Instead of using the yeast pitch rate calculator to pour that amount in your beer, if it's been sitting for 2 weeks in your fridge, you might want to toss into a starter before you put it back in your beer.
That's right.
And same thing for vials or packages that have been sitting for 3 months. Again, you want to kind of wake those up. Same thing if you had harvested some yeast and save that in your fridge for 3 months, you wouldn't just go pitch that straight in, right? You would take some time to get that active again.
It's about activity. I've done it where I've only had a few vials and just want to wake them up just quickly, 12 hours if I have to. I want a short lag time any way you look at it. And you can't overpower it with numbers, you're better off just pushing the start. If you got a few hours, maybe the starting of your brew day,
even that would help. Okay.
Yeah.
And then another question. You guys kind of covered this. Just to reiterate, someone asked, how long can I keep a starter for? Do I have to pitch it high croizen? Was his question, or can this thing sit around?
You put it in the fridge, let it all settle out. You decant the wort, and then you're kind of in that repitching yeast zone where you're at 100% viability. The longer it sits, your viability drops, the glycogen reserves, trehalose reserves, they start to drop, and you know, you end up having to start over.
Yeah, but it could sit in that fridge for a couple days.
Yeah,
okay. a couple weeks even. I mean,
although you know, use it within the week.
Yeah,
if you're going to go a couple of weeks, you might want to pitch that
start
into
over
a new starter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
use that into a new starter.
The critical factor there is oxygen exposure. Once, I mean, if you've got yeast that have gone through high Croix and now they're going dormant, if you put those in the fridge, they'll stay in a hibernation state for quite a period of time, a week, 2 weeks. If they're exposed to oxygen that time, though, they're going to have to start using those reserves that they've built up.
Okay.
So that's why if you can minimize oxygen time and temperature in the fridge, you can keep that vitality up. But if you were to say take that, you get that starter done, you set it out on the counter, within days, with oxygen exposure, you're gonna be back down where you started, and you have to do the whole starter thing all over again.
Okay. Here's a clarification, something that Doc said about his process. This listener says, I've been following Randy Mosher's starter method in the Brewer's Companion, and he says to boil your starter for 30 minutes. The person wants to know, did I understand right that 15 minutes is okay?
Yeah, if you're using DME, I'll jump in here for Doc. If 5 minutes is fine.
Yeah.
You're just sanitizing.
I want to sanitize. That's mostly what I do. But if you look at it, it starts out kind of cloudy, and you'll see the hot break. Mm-hmm. Come up again with the egg drop soup looking thing, and by the time 15 minutes, it's almost clear with chunks in there.
Especially at the foam control.
Yeah.
Happens.
And
like
it
that.
Does. So all I wanted, and I let it sit while I get the water bath going, so it's above 180 degrees for a little while after that, too.
Okay. So even longer than really.
Right.
Longer than the boil.
I think it's, again, diminishing returns about boiling it that long.
Okay. Here's a good question. What the hell is osmotic shock? Because if we could do that simply.
It's a band from the 80s.
Yeah, that would be a good band name, wouldn't it?
It'd be a one-hit wonder.
If you put something...
More hits than we have right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you put something into a more concentrated solution than the internal of whatever it is, one thing I liked to used to do as a kid was take a saltwater fish and throw it in the freshwater tank and... The other way around.
Of course you did.
Of course
the psychopathic youth of Dr. Scott.
What happens is the more concentrated wants to, the less concentrated wants to dilute the more concentrated. So if the cell goes in there and inside him is less concentrated and you put him into a big concentrated thing, it wants to almost
suck the liquid
right out of him. And the cell wall's got to hold that back until it can kind of slowly equalize.
Just like everything, yeast in space. Just
everything tries to equalize across any gradient, right? So any permeable membrane. And what's going to happen is the yeast have to do things like keeping alcohol out and, keeping water in or out and various concentrations of sugars, things like that.
A lot of sugar outside, a lot of sugar and no sugar inside. They can do it up to a certain gradient, a difference there. But when you put a big difference in there, it's going to shock them a lot, maybe. And if they've already been through the ringer and have not such good cell walls anymore, their viability is going to go down quite a bit. One more thing.
Okay, got it. Affirmative action. Okay. here's a size question. Does the size of the stir bar matter?
Size always matters.
You want motion.
Yeah, it probably depends. On the
good one, Tom. Yeah.
Depends on the size of the starter vessel. I would assume, right?
Yeah, big old vessel.
Yeah.
That you need to be stirring.
Yeah, you got to be able to hit the sides.
Yeah, you got
to
get that. You got to have a good sized bar.
Yeah.
Know how to spin that thing.
But the smaller ones can spin faster.
Right. Yeah. It's all how you use it.
Yeah.
The one I use in my 5-gallon carboy, it's actually got a knob on the end. Both ends.
Oh, wow. It's two-sided.
You have to have the barbell one if you have a dome.
So that it stays in the center.
It stays in
the
Otherwise, it just flips off and flies to the side.
Okay.
And that's a whole different trick to get that barbell one into the middle. I've got tricks for that one, too.
Any opinions about using Pilsner malt for your starters instead of...
That's fine. You can use any all malt.
It's fine. Okay.
Yeah. It'll work just fine.
Oh, yeah.
You just want to be careful that you're not creating a lot of real long chain dextrins, so lower mash temps, simpler sugars.
Okay.
Maltose is what you're shooting for.
All right.
Like we were saying earlier, you know, kind of you to some degree you target your starter wort to your beer style to some degree to keep the so the yeast grow and acclimate to that kind of environment. It's not. Unless,
you're talking about free amino nitrogen,
right.
Minerals, things like that. Not.
It's not that big a deal most of the time.
Uh-huh.
But the real difference is you don't want to try to grow yeast simply on glucose or sucrose, very simple sugars. Mm-hmm. You want to use at least malt extract, if not a real all malt wort, because that's the profile of the wort they're going to be going into. They generate the enzymes to ferment that kind of wort. Simple sugars won't do it, but most of the time you don't have to be that particular about it. You can, Pilsner malt, sure, yeah, you can do a mash, target the fermentability of that mash that you intend to brew with, but you really don't have to be that specific because you're not trying to make beer so much as you're trying to grow yeast. And I mean, you guys, make wort and can it. I always use malt extract. I rarely have leftover, wort that I've saved.
I do it from malt extract. I take DME, okay. The 10-to-1 ratio directly in a mason jar with a pinch of Servomyces, and then I seal it up, put it in the pressure cooker. I get sterile wort, and then it's good for a year.
This could be a whole show on
sterility.
Cheap, easy ways to do it.
We're gonna have to do probably another four starter shows in order to really cover it all.
The main thing is keep the starter, make it simple.
Okay.
Use DME.
All right. One last starter question, size question, sorry, for you, Doc.
For me.
Yeah. Weird, right? Just that you when you're talking about...
stepping up?
Please. No, reducing the temperature so that you could decant and pitch. And
right.
What you had said was it's fine to put it in a fridge as long as it's a big enough starter.
Right.
But you didn't specify what you meant. So people ask, what are you considering a big enough starter?
You don't want to decant what you got and then put it in... 12-ounce kind of container. A 2,000-milliliter Erlenmeyer is fine.
So that you can put in the fridge, and
right.
It will cool down slow enough to not shock
it. It's got a big thermal mass to it, and you just don't want to put it in an ice bath and just crash it.
Okay.
And just having it in a norm, don't put it in the freezer. Just put it in the refrigerator, cover it, and it'll come down slow enough to where it doesn't shock the yeast so much.
Okay. And then let me squeeze in one last question because I thought it was a good one. Someone had just asked, hey, is there any difference in all the processes you're talking about for this starter if you're doing an all-grain batch or an extract batch?
No. thing. It's really volume of the beer you're going to ferment and...
gravity of the beer.
Gravity of the beer and whether it's ale, lager, or hybrid. And I'd encourage everyone to go to MrMalty.com, not because I make like a ton of money off of the site, but because there's a lot of good starter information there. I got the 14 questions about starters. It's a good read. And the pitching rate calculator will help you out quite a bit. Feel free to... One thing I think a lot of people don't do is mess around with the growth rate. You can move that slider any way you want, very little growth and lots of vials or packages, or all the way to lots of growth and the fewest number of packages of liquid yeast. And it's okay. Either way will work just fine. You can go to a larger starter, smaller starter, whatever you want, or you can do multiple steps. I need to add some more instructions to that thing.
It's all about the package.
There's also some good and basic starter information at one of our sponsors' website. If you go to morebeer.com, you could search around for some starter info.
Mm-hmm.
There may even be a video now of doing a starter there. I know they've been doing a lot of videos lately, but morebeer.com has some starter info.
Packaging room girls?
Yeah.
You must have got something good, Ben.
Well, no. Yeah. She took her 50-pound sack of grain off her shoulder and then the one off the other shoulder. And, yeah, nice lady.
Does something for you, huh?
That's it from the chat.
That's why he likes the German women, too,
Yeah.
Able to carry the 8 liters at once. Man, that's impressing him. The stories this guy got of, wandering into, houses of ill repute by accident, priceless. You guys got to hear these stories, I'm telling you. Priceless.
Okay.
All right, so that's starters. We're I think all in agreement that no matter how well off you are, Bill Gates himself as a brewer should be making a starter, even though he could buy all the packages of yeast he wants. he should be making a starter
right.
with that.
Definitely.
If just to activate things, get them out of, you know, get those yeast ready to ferment. Making a starter is very simple. Let me not neglect. If you're making dry, if you're taking using dry yeast, you don't need to make a starter. You should properly rehydrate them, regardless of what the package says from the manufacturer.
Yeah,
just sprinkle it on.
No,
don't do that. For the pro brewers, they tell them to rehydrate. You should be rehydrating too. It's very simple, and will get you much more, much higher viability. Probably double your viability.
So don't
throw in half dead yeast.
You can find instructions, beer, more beer, on that too, on rehydrating your yeast.
Yeah, lots of good information on that. All right, so you're gonna make a starter. You're gonna take a 10-to-1 ratio. You're gonna use a gram of DME to 10 mL of water, and that's gonna give you an approximate starter gravity in the 1035-1040 range, depending on your DME and how humid things are. You boil that. You don't need any hops. You're going to boil that. You're going to need, let's say, from the pitching rate calculator, you figure out how much starter you need. And you're going to boil that up on the stove in a safe vessel. Erlenmeyer flasks are great because you can just put them right on the stove and boil in that, and then it's all sanitized and ready to go. Cover it with a piece of foil. Pinch a yeast nutrient before the boil. I'm sorry. Cover it with foil. Chill that thing down, then you can put your yeast in there. If you have a stir plate, great. If you don't, just shake it. If you can shake that, in my test, if you're able to shake it every half hour, you had a lot more enjoyment. No, you had a lot more yeast growth. It actually is nearly as effective as having a stir plate. Okay, so if you could just walk around shaking giving your Erlenmeyer a swirl continuously, that's pretty much almost the same thing as a stir plate. So you don't necessarily have to have a stir plate. It's just easier, and there's lots of cheap ways to build your own. Once you get that, you can go ahead and do those starters at room temperature. Not a problem. You know, as long as room temperature is in the 80s or below. Once that's done, if your volume of starter is such that you don't want to put all that into your beer, understandable. Only for average gravity ales is that really acceptable. Otherwise, you put it in the fridge, let it chill down, let the yeast settle out, decant off the spent wort, and then you can put that yeast into your beer, or you can even add a little more starter to it, get it raging, and dump that whole thing into your beer. Did I forget anything? Pretty good wrap up.
I think
it's
so.
Good.
Yeah. All right.
Make starters.
Peanut group. Peanut gallery.
Oh yeah.
There we go. Thanks everybody. If you get a chance, visit the Brewing Network store. It's a chance to pick up a signed copy by both John Palmer and myself of Brewing Classic Styles. There are shirts available, hoodies. Check out the new hoodies. Lots of great stuff in the Brewing Network store. Also, if you get a chance, you might want to hit that donate button, and you can help
us. New t-shirts coming in next week, right?
Keep the...
New t-shirts coming in.
That's right. Oh, Bruce Strong t-shirts. Oh, thanks. See, I knew John was around here other than his good looks. Bruce Strong t-shirts should be here next week, and I tell you, they are sweet. I am going to be sporting a Bruce Strong t-shirt, and I hope you are too.
I will.
It's excellent stuff.
They go fast too.
Yeah, they'll sell out. We did a run of Bruce Strong shirts earlier, and it's totally gone by the time everyone's like, oh, I thought there were shirts. No, gone.
You saw one, buy it.
Keep watching the store and jump all over those when they do come in. I think you're gonna really the real cool artwork on this. Very cool shirts. And BYO. John and I both write for BYO, and you can get a subscription on the Brewing Network that and. A good half of that subscription goes to the Brewing Network, so that's a generous cut there. So sign up for BYO if you get a chance, and we will be back in 2 weeks. If you're listening to podcast or if you're listening live, just hang on, and we'll be up with another show here just briefly.
Yep, talking about sanitation.
Sanitation.
Hey. See ya.
All right, Bruce Strong.